Oh, I am Joel Walker, the host of this here podcast. I run Industrial Resolution, Pub Forge, and the Central Pennsylvania Open Source Conference. Been in tech for the past 12 years, and this podcast is dedicated to the challenges that we face in the tech sector and what can we do about them. Here with me today is Paul Champion. He is the director of TransEd Apprenticeship Services, a nonprofit organization out of Baltimore, Maryland. And he currently offers registered apprenticeship programs for tech, the tech sector in Pennsylvania, Maryland, Virginia, Washington, D.C. Did I miss any?
Nope. We hopefully West Coast and in Midwest later this year.
We're going to talk about apprenticeship. And there's a lot of ideas that will jump into people's heads when they hear that word. But let's talk about what in a legal sense, right? What is an apprenticeship in the state of Pennsylvania, my home state?
Yeah, thanks, Joel. I mean, apprenticeships are really simple. People think they're really complicated. But in essence, what they are is they are a job with training. So, you know, I usually do this thing where when I go to any conferences and sort of say, put your hand up if you've done an apprenticeship, and there's not many people put their hands up. and then I sort of say, well, put your hands up if you were paid for learning the skills you needed to do the job that you're doing now. In sort of 100% of the room, put the hands up.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very simple concept. But in a legal sense of the word is that an apprentice needs to be employed. In our tech apprentices, they need to do 2,000 hours in the workplace. And they need to complete at least 144 hours in classroom instruction or underpinning knowledge, which can be done either in their own time. 85% of employers that we work with give the apprentice time off to do their classroom instruction.
And to be clear, my understanding is that an apprenticeship can last anywhere from 1 to 4 years. And so You're talking about a 1 year interval?
Yeah, so we're talking about our tech apprentices are 1 year. Not many people finish within the year. It takes them a little bit longer. And the reason why we do that is because there is two types of apprenticeships. There is the time-based one which says in the law that once you've done 2,000 hours in the workplace and you've done 144 hours classroom instruction, you're done. You know,
right?
But we all know in any job, it doesn't matter if you do 2,144. You're not done if you're not competent at doing the job.
Right.
So we run our apprenticeships in a hybrid manner. You know, so we work with the employer and the apprentice to prove competency as well.
Okay.
So you know, so you don't finish until you're competent, until you feel competent, until we at TransEd feel you're competent, until the employer says you can do the job.
Okay.
So that's why it takes a bit longer.
And from their perspective, who's this on-the-job training, OJT, right, is that acronym, who is doing the on-the-job training and who says that they've passed or
so it's learned? usually their mentor or their supervisor.
Okay.
You know, so you know, when the apprentice is in the workplace, you know, they will always have a supervisor. So we link directly with those people and sort of they collect evidence of competency. So if they've done a job, the supervisor can do a witness testimony to say, you know, Paul did this really well and knows how to update user profiles and delete user profiles if that's what they're doing.
And in tech, is that like sort of take like a little bit of a bent, like is that a supervisor or is that maybe a senior developer or is that a, you know, there's all these different, we can't agree on what we call anything in tech,
exactly.
You know, so what fits the bill?
So I mean, if you, it's more like, if you're looking at like a plumbing apprentice, it would be a master plumber, a person who had done the job.
Or a journey worker.
So in essence, it's sort of the person that is most relevant, who understands and can do the job that the person is an apprentice for.
Gotcha. So they're doing the work. It's a more experienced coder, HR supervisor.
No. Somebody who knows what they're doing and has done the work and can identify whether somebody knows whether they're competent or not. And also we'll help the employers to be able to identify competency as well. You know, we have a little program that we work with employers on so they can train that mentor to identify competency.
Oh, that's great.
So they don't feel like they're swimming on their own, you know?
Right. Yeah. If I went and asked some of my engineers, hey, can you tell me if this person is legit? They might tell me on the side, but if they're gonna slap their name on it, they won't.
Yeah.
This is the rules of the game.
You know, so we have set ways of doing that. And we have a platform that collects that evidence as well.
Any other, apprenticeship baseline stuff?
Yeah, so I mean, one of the key things is that's a graduated wage scale.
Okay.
You know, so if you've got, say, a $40,000 post that you're advertising and you think an apprentice can do it, you know, they would the apprentice would come on at 50% of that or minimum wage, whichever's the greatest. And then at 50% through the program, if they've met all the requirements and got all the skills that you expect them to have, they would go up to 75% of the salary. And then, you know, at the end point, once they've graduated and they're competent and all that, then you'd put them on to 100% of the salary. So, you know, so there's a carrot for the apprentice to learn the skill.
Yeah.
You know, and keep on making sure they're doing the right things and doing their learning and getting involved in the business, because they, you know, it's that one of the only apprentice is one of the only jobs you can double your salary in a year.
And everyone knows, yeah, exactly when the salary increases and what that looks like.
It's formal. It's built in. There's a review process that we get involved in as the apprenticeship intermediary, you know. So, you know, and employer gets the exact skills that they want the employee to have, because we build that individual learning plan. It's not a set. It's not sort of you do these units and then that's it.
Yeah.
You know, we'll build individual learning plan and meet exactly what the employer wants.
Okay, great.
So I've been involved in delivering apprenticeships for the last 28 years. I was an apprentice as well. And, you know, earlier on you were talking about how looking at jobs that don't exist yet. You know, I think I was an apprentice in a job that probably doesn't exist anymore. Really? I did an apprenticeship back in 1980 in an iron foundry. You know, as a mold core maker, I used to make gas turbine casings and stuff like that. And I'm sure it's still there, but it's not there on the size that it was. So I haven't seen any jobs recently for molders. You know, so I think the job that I did has probably disappeared. But it's a really valid point that we talk about the skills that's required for the future, because, you know, some of the skills that the kids are leaving school with now, just because they do as a hobby, were skills that I or my generation had to train for. Mm-hmm. I remember just talking about tech. I remember we used to do computer science at school back in the late 70s. We used to have to go to the local town hall to do computer science.
Oh, wow.
and go into a room full of this machinery that we didn't understand. And can you remember the daisy wheel printers? We used to have that paper with the green lines on it.
Uh-huh.
You know, and like the holes down the side that it used to ratchet through. We used to walk out with piles of that with loads of numbers on it, you know, and used to go back and sort of sit behind a desk looking really sort of intelligent, analyzing it. I used to go home, my mum used to say, "Oh, what are you doing today, son?" And I said, "Ah, computer science. We did this. What's that paper?" "I got no idea." "I've got no idea." You know, so
it hasn't changed much.
So it hasn't changed much. No. So I'm still don't really know much about tech. No, that's, I'm kidding. Don't know as much as I should, but I think, you know, I think it just shows you that when I left school, one of the options I had, or one of the options that I really wanted to take, was go on an apprenticeship, because, mm-hmm, you know, the university for me wasn't an option. It wasn't an option for just the general community that I lived in. You know, you had to live in a different community, be of a different class, I suppose, to go to university. So apprenticeships and going to work as soon as I left school was the only option for me.
And talk a little bit about that, if you don't mind. I mean, we often just refer to, well, over in, you know, United Kingdom, over in Europe, apprenticeship is just, you know, very, very common. Mm-hmm. You know, in America, it's definitely, it's a little bit different. So, and just flesh that out for us a little bit.
I mean, when I left out of school in 1980, and apprenticeships were sort of really popular, but popular in the same things that they are in the US at the minute.
Okay.
So, you know, so popular in sort of construction, in engineering, in plumbing, and all of those sort of places where you get your hands dirty, you know. And I don't know whether it was ever, it never had the parity with people going to college. You know, it never had that sort of similar feel. Right. And I think people did even then think it was for those that weren't going to go to college. But there wasn't that big gap between it. You know, it was sort of like, because electricians and all that were still revered quite highly in those days when shipbuilding was around and all that sort of stuff. So, you know, so I just left school on a Friday, went to work on a Monday, and went straight into apprenticeship. In the US, then apprenticeship sort of died off a little bit. You know, we had the recession of the 80s and, you know, all of that sort of stuff kicked in. And then apprenticeship started to die off. And then the key thing, I think, for the UK and for Europe was that when you go through a recession, all of the big engineering jobs disappeared. So you had steelworks closing down, you had shipyards closing down, you had mines closing down. So there had to be a shift in what people did. So, you know, so the country moved from a manufacturing base to a service sector based. So, you know, we had call centers and business and, you know, IT started to come in those sorts of things. So, again, as we're going to talk about, you know, today, is that when there's a hole in the market for skills, the education infrastructure that's there doesn't really turn out at the pace, at the level, all of the time, the people that's required as business grows really fast. So, you know, so apprenticeships then had a renaissance in the 90s when...
Could you say that again?
A renaissance.
Oh, my God.
Is that just too much for you?
Boy, oh, boy. I got a little tickle in my belly.
So I'll say it again just for the listeners out there.
Get really close to the microphone. Okay.
So... apprenticeships had a renaissance. So it had it increased in demand. Let's say that. just so Joe can get past the word. So it increased in demand, but in non-service sector. Mm-hmm. And I think so. Those apprenticeships that we're talking about in the UK there are now what the US is calling non-traditional. Mm-hmm. You know, I like to call them modern apprenticeships. You know, because if you go into a school now and you say to a set of school kids, do you think that IT is traditional or non-traditional? Mm-hmm. They're not going to say it's non-traditional, are they? You know, they've grown up with it. You know, they're going to say it's a traditional route in work. So I think we like to call them modern apprenticeships. And the US is going through the same journey that the UK went through, and that's trying to identify new routes in apprenticeships because there's a skill shortage. And one of the areas that we focus on, you know, you focus your business on and I focus our main delivery on is technology, because technology is technology, you know, in the UK, Europe, or wherever it is. You know, mm-hmm. You don't have building codes, you don't have all those sort of things to deal with. So that's why we came with tech. And, you know, we've built sort of IT professional qualifications, cyber qualifications, data science qualifications.
Sure. And so in America currently, your sort of footprint, talk about the apprenticeships that your nonprofit organization is offering and where.
So our footprint is mainly East Coast at the minute. So, you know, we are registered to deliver our apprenticeships in Maryland, Pennsylvania, DC, and Virginia. Mm-hmm. You know, we're hoping to do some work in the West Coast, in the Midwest soon. But our apprenticeships are mainly around tech. So we have two levels of IT professional. And the great thing about those is that an employer can look at those apprenticeships and can look at the learning outcomes and the competencies that are in that apprenticeship and choose a route that they want for their employee to do. So, you know, you can go into a business and be two tech, sort of tech support people in there, both sitting on desks next to each other, but they're doing very different things. So, you know, so an employer can choose from the units that we have on our apprenticeships to build the individual learning plan that they need for, that build the skills for what they need that employee to do. Mm-hmm. So it's a far more flexible route than going out and doing a vendor qualification and just coming with those skills. We can work with them to build the actual route and from the job description that they have to meet the needs. So we do IT professional one, IT professional two routes to cyber security, because you know that's on in the growth. We have a data science one as well.
California's set a goal of 30,000 new cybersecurity professionals by 2030.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, it's like, you know, as you said earlier, it's like. Jobs that don't exist. What does cyber mean? You know, what does tech mean?
That's terrifying, honestly.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, if you look at cyber now, if somebody says define cybersecurity for me, you know, I'm sure you would hear words like protecting data, protecting systems, you know, and all of that sort of stuff. But is that exactly what it's going to mean in 2 years? Is that in 18 months? Right. Or does it get bunched with something else? Mm-hmm. So I think, you know, one of the great things about apprenticeships is that you can write them and develop them and register them and work with employers to build something that's relevant for now. Mm-hmm. Where dare I say it, mainstream education programs build something that's relevant now, but is maybe not going to be relevant in 3 years. Mm-hmm. Apprenticeships can move and flex and shift and develop themselves. And that's why they're all built with employers in mind and built with employers. And that's what we're doing mm-hmm. in Lancaster through the Lancaster Tech Partnership. You mm-hmm. know, that's what we want to do, is make sure that employers are at the heart of building the systems and the processes and the services to get the skills they need in Lancaster.
Yeah, absolutely. We were able to co-write a grant together, and we were awarded a small little stipend from the state to form this, what, the Lancaster Tech Industry Partnership. And some of the thought behind bringing this coalition together is to have an employer-led sort of roundtable of how do we address some of those needs that were the challenges that we are facing in tech, right? Yeah. And the observation is that so many education and organizations and institutions and so many political groups and so many nonprofits are concerned about, you know, the end point of one good job, right? And like a stability for individuals to sort of grow into. There's so much focus and attention in that, you know, individual human development as a whole across the country that I think what the tech industry partnership is going to do is give employers not just a seat at the table, but as those groups responsible for offering those jobs, it's going to say, well, what are we actually after? Yeah. Right. So we're very excited to bring this forum together. It's sort of a quarterly convening, that many employers in the central Pennsylvania sort of area will be participating in. But let's talk about that a little bit, mm-hmm. Because apprenticeship isn't the only route to acquire new talent. You've got a great perspective on the global sort of like challenge that we're facing and, you know, shortages and statistics. But maybe you can touch on a little bit of those as you answer this question of why, as an HR, you know, person, or as a recruiter, as a hiring, you know, person in tech, should I consider an apprenticeship when I don't have, I'm not getting that comfort of the 4-year degree, mm-hmm. of so many of the, you know, 3 years experience? Why consider an alternative where day one, day one of your learning experience, you're an employee?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think I'm hoping that listeners can start to see a thread of what's coming out here, you know, about jobs of the future and all of those sort of things, and the place at which tech is starting to develop. I mean, you know, we keep on hearing about the fourth industrial revolution.
Yeah.
You know, and I like
to call it the resolution.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, let's do that. so there's two things going on here. I think, you know, we all know that the other industrial revolutions that have happened, you know, were more mechanical or agricultural and all of those sort of things, and people shifted from the sort of countryside to the metropolises of this world, really. But I mean, this one is one where the, we know it's happening, but the pace at which we happen, we just don't know, because, you know, as you guys know better than me, technology duplicates itself really quickly and sort of, you know, exponential, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And so we don't know, you know, we keep on hearing about automation and robotics and all of those sort of things. And, you know, we're recording this the day after the two Democratic debates where it was mentioned about, you know, people losing jobs because of automation. But I think one of the things that will happen, there'll be jobs created because of that automation.
Absolutely.
And when you think about if there's jobs created, the skills that need to be done, and that's the space that we're operating in. So, you know, so one of the things that we have as our battle cry at Transit Apprenticeships is that, and I'll change the name of that one as well. You know, we believe that there needs to be an apprenticeship resolution, apprenticeship revolution, and that's our battle cry at the minute. And what do I mean by that is, you know, what I mean by that is that we want to get into a position where HR managers pull a job description out of their filing cabinet for an open position that they currently have and look at it and say, I wonder if an apprentice can do this job. Now that takes revolutionary change to get to that point. You know, so the HR hiring manager of this world are probably the key revolutionaries in not just for apprenticeships, but for how the skills within the businesses are structured and developed and organized. Mm-hmm. You know, because that's where the change happens. Because we go to so many businesses where all the jobs are advertised, say, in 4 years school and 3 years experience. So you sit down with them, We have a thing called Open for Apprenticeship Toolkit, which walks them through what an apprenticeship is, and we do a review of their job descriptions. And when you sit down, you say, if you employed somebody to do this job, what would they need to do on day one? You find that by the end, 60 or 70% of the time, they don't need a 4-year school. They don't need 3 years experience.
Sure.
They need a certain level of skill, and then they need an education program that's embedded within what they do at work to give them the skills over a period of time to become a fully sort of fledged productive employee. So, you know, so that's what apprenticeship clearly does. So you ask a question about why should HR managers look at that, you know, and I think it's cost effective. You know, your apprenticeships come in at a lower wage and build up that salary as they go through and get more skilled. You know, there is some government support to help with that. You know, through Transed apprenticeships and through the work that we're doing with IndyRes and Pubforge as well, which Joel hasn't told you who Pubforge is either, but he should, because it's amazing place. So the work we're doing together on that is, you know, we will help to find people for employers that will meet their needs. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? So there's a cost saving. Also, because there's a dual investment of somebody, of an apprentice coming into the business that knows they're not fully baked yet, mm-hmm. and the employer is investing in that, there is the dual investment. So you get a lot more sort of commitment from an apprentice than you would do from somebody who's on that journey of getting a bit more skill, a bit more experience, and moving for 50 cents on the dollar.
Right.
You know, so I don't, because apprenticeships, modern apprenticeships are still relatively new in the US, I don't tend to quote many statistics, but one that repeats itself the world over is that if an apprentice goes through the apprenticeship, between 87% and 94% stay with the employee that they did the apprenticeship for 3 or more years. Now that, the return on investment for that has got to be huge.
Oh my God.
Because you know that the turnover in tech companies is massive.
Oh, I call it transient tech worker syndrome.
Yeah.
TTSD.
Exactly.
Right? 2 years. My goodness, the clock is ticking. You better be looking for another job.
Yeah.
It's one of the most unstable workforces there is. The job hopping is prolific and not without good reason if you're a programming professional too. So what are some of the things that actually talk about that? Why do you think retention will work better through an apprenticeship? And specifically in tech, more so than in, you know, why in an industry where retention is a huge challenge, why will an apprenticeship help?
Well, because as we've said, that tech skills change faster than any other sort of sector at the moment, don't they? So an apprenticeship allows, so you can have, just say you had an apprenticeship at the start of the year doing a help desk position, and you took an apprentice on in the middle of the year, there could be very different roles because of what's changed in the tech over that 6 months. Hmm. So in essence, what you get is you get the opportunity through an apprenticeship to be able to tailor and manipulate and manage what each individual is learning. Mm-hmm. So then also what you can do as well with apprenticeships is, if you've got people who have been, say, let's help desk, the easiest one to do. You've got people who've been tier one help desk technicians in your business. You know they're either going to move on or they're going to move up. They don't have the skills to move up at the minute. You know, so what you can do is you can put them incumbent workers on a higher level apprenticeship to get those skills to move on to the next position. You're investing in your staff. You know, your staff feel as if you're bringing them into the debate. The staff can talk about the skills they need. They can share the skills they already have. And then you're doing the apprenticeship with those incumbent workers, move them on, and then you backfill those entry-level positions with apprentices as well. So in essence, what you're doing is you're changing the way that, as a business, you are hiring, training, managing, rewarding your staff.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's one of the key things. It's not just a... you come in, you get trained, you do your job. Mm-hmm. It's more of a cultural thing, mm-hmm. you know. I mean, I have conversations with people about when I was an apprentice, when I was a kid. You know, there is things that I did then about how you interact with people, about the respect that you had for people, about the way that you communicated. All of those things are things that have stuck with me all through my life, and you know, it made me feel that I'm on an apprenticeship for everything that I do. You know, we've all changed our jobs. If you treat it like you're on an apprenticeship, you have to learn everything about it and become part of it and become part of the business. And I think, you know, that an apprenticeship allows you to create that culture.
Well, and so I love this concept of this embeddable you know, upskilling culture, mm-hmm. right? I think you know, I've been in the industry for about 12 years, and in this area, and my observation is successful companies take care of their employees, then they're the ones that are retaining employees are investing in their employees' professional development. I mean, that's the long and short of it, right? There's competitive pay, there's all that stuff. But this is an industry where if you don't stay on top of those skills, you quickly become, the rust. It's a tool shed, you know, in a seaside village. Things are getting rusty quick. And that's part of why the job hopping is so prolific. It's because we put engineers to work, software engineers to work, doing the same thing over and over and over. Well, they're only proficient in one thing while every other area is getting, dull, and they need to, remain attractive to employers. So it's this positive pressure. So those that are retaining their employees are making sure to educate and train and invest in their employees. And what you're offering essentially is a framework, an embeddable system that helps you do that. Is that what I'm hearing?
Yeah, I mean, it's like one of your heroes, Richard Branson, who we spoke about this morning.
Sure.
You know, I mean, was it him? I think it was him that sort of said, don't count the cost of the training that you do, count the cost. And it wasn't his exact words, obviously, because, he's British. I just can't remember everything he said. Don't focus on the cost of training your staff, focus on the cost if you don't train your staff.
Right.
Do you know what I mean? And I think that is quite significant in the sense of that, if 50% of your staff leave because you don't think you care about them, you don't think you're supporting them, then they're just going to walk, and that's going to be a greater cost than doing the training,
Absolutely. I mean, I can look at my own experience, right? So I've been, working in custom software solutions for these 12 years, and the observation, is in custom solutions, this is one of the reasons that we're able to retain and engage our own employees, is that we're constantly being asked to do solutions that have never been done before.
Yeah.
Like nobody goes looking for a custom solution until they have exhausted every other option, right? So by its very nature, our work is typically involving someone who is taking that deep dive, might be, maybe a senior level sort of architect or somebody stepping forward to be lead on a project. And they might be, literally months ahead of where, the rest of the pack, but that's enough to make the difference. That person will, upskill, learn everything they can, and then start to mentor and train a team that's going to work alongside them. So that's been this cadence we've had for a long time, where somebody takes this deep dive into that new technology, figures it all out, and then brings everyone up to speed. And so this idea of, I think what is often commonly confused with apprenticeship is right, thought of in this mentoring sort of sense, in this you've got your master craftsman, you've got your, person who's just doing everything, learning everything from them. That idea, I think, is a lot of people's sort of idea and understanding of what apprenticeship is. And I think what the light bulb was for me is that, okay, this is more than just a philosophy, more than just a mindset. It's actually, when you look at how the government treats apprenticeship and what that actually means, this is an embeddable system that adheres to that mindset, that makes that happen. And the overlap between how we naturally work and how apprenticeships work, to me, was
it's sort of like hand in glove, wasn't it, really?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, is it? To not get too formal here, but there's a few statistics just to spout off here. I think it's important that people know this, and I think you being steeped in the tech sector in, South Central PA will probably be able to recognize this as well. The recent survey what's that? It's a bit like what's that? Family fortunes. You know, you get a buzz. A recent survey said, you know, 40% of US employers can't find the much needed skills that they need. I mean, 40%. Do you know what I mean? That's crazy.
Is that tech sector? Is that
this is just general setup. But I think from what I'm gathering, we've been asking our employers that we work with, and it's even higher than that.
Okay.
You know, we've got people who've had vacancies on their website for 12 months and can't fill them. Hmm. And I can't understand why they won't consider apprenticeships. Very strange. You must want to just keep to it. I keep on saying to them, I'll come back in 6 months when they're still on your site, but they don't seem to get the joke, or they just don't understand my accent, one of the two. 60% are disappointed with a lack of preparation for entry-level jobs. So, you know, they're getting people who they're just disappointed with. And we're not just talking about people who don't go to college or don't go to two-year college and go to four-year college. We're talking
Absolutely.
About people are turning up with not the skills. And then this is the crazy one. 92% said the skills shortage was negatively impacting on productivity. So the thing I want to build on the back of that is that, you know, we're going through this golden age of an economy, on, you know, stock exchanges up, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And we had this global financial downturn, 2008, impacted everybody, you know, everybody knew about that. If we've got businesses who are saying, if we've got 40% of businesses saying they can't get the skills, 60% are saying that they're disappointed with people that are turning up for their jobs, so they're not taking them on. And 92% are saying that it's impacting the bottom line. Can you imagine what the impact of having a global skills downturn will be? You know, that,
right.
You know, before it was a financial downturn because of, well, depending on your opinion, mismanagement of money or mortgages or all that sort of stuff, whatever you want to say. But if you have a global downturn in skills where productivity dips, eventually you're going to hit this ceiling of there will not be to capitalize on this golden age of sort of tech or golden age of skill or golden age of anything, mm-hmm. because they just can't get the people. You know, and that's the thing that is concerning me. And I don't understand why employers continually go to the same pond to try and get their employees that in, when every time they go, it's dry. You know, they turn up and go, let's see if we can get an employee from here. Ah, we didn't get anybody. We're disappointed they don't have the skills.
Yeah.
Spend another 4 months with lower productivity than they said. What do apprenticeships do as well, and this is close to your heart because we've had conversations about Lancaster itself in this, is about being able to access people in the talent pool that never gets looked at.
Oh, yeah.
You know, within those community-based organizations, people, you know, it's people will be out there who have the skills, the right frame of mind, the right types of thinking that are just not being spotted because they're not in the colleges. They don't go to the schools where STEM is important. You know, they'll be playing ball in the street with their friends, you know, and you know, there is people out there that could be doing these jobs for employers, but we're not just picking them up.
Yeah.
It's absolutely. Like probably, you know, when somebody said once to me that when Usain Bolt was the fastest man in the world, they didn't agree he was the fastest man in the world because it'd be somebody else who just wasn't spotted. Hmm. There's already somebody faster or better. And I think we've got in your, you know, of course, your coders, programmers, genius coders, programmers out there who are never going to be spotted. We have to do something about that. And that will give apprenticeships, allows employers to, in a safe environment, look at those people from those areas that wouldn't normally look at, and then build the skills and tailor the skills that they want in their business.
Yeah.
Much diverse population. And employers just need to make that step change and think about how they employ people and the routes that they train people. And, you know, I think if we don't do that, we will that number of 40% will go up. That number of 92% productivity will go down. You know, it'll go even more, where more people won't be able to get productive and turnover will just go through the roof.
It really actually strikes me as ironic because, you know, I think it was your second statistic there. You know, we've hired, you know, fresh college graduates before, and it has never been less than 9 months of ramp up time before they really are contributing, you know, in value. And I'm floating that education, right? That, because what they never had was that real work experience. They just had, you know, this theory, which certainly does serve in some foundational ways. But the lack of experience, the lack of being prepared for the workforce has really driven us bonkers over the years. And I think that's something that, you know, employers, the tech companies that can really relate to, most people will be nodding and saying, you know, yep, it's tough to hire truly new junior developers. especially when they leave. They always leave. When you're floating that cost of their initial ramp up, yeah. and then like 9 months later, after just when they're about to start making money, you know, for you, they're like, okay, now I can get a better job and get paid more, and they job hop. No, but wait, what's ironic is that fear, that whatever that is, like that, as somebody who employs people, like makes me leery of, if I were to think about apprenticeship, what would be in my head is, so you want to get, you want to give me somebody with less experience and have them get started right away. How much more ramp up is that for me? Now that.
And I mean, that's exactly the next comment I was going to make, is that you got two options. One option is to take somebody who you know you're going to spend 9 months with anyway. Let's just park that statistic that you just said. You take somebody who apparently has the right education. You've interviewed them. They look like they've got the right skills and the right education. You bring them, and I'm not bemoaning colleges. Let's make that clear. You know,
we can bemoan them.
No, I don't want to. I think it's a diverse tapestry that we must deliver in education.
I don't think we have all day, but I mean, we can at least set aside some time.
Well, you know, I'll leave the bemoan. As an employer, you can bemoan what you want. As an education provider, it's really difficult for me.
But come back and talk about how four-year degrees have been gatekeeping.
Yeah, yeah.
But
yeah,
you go ahead.
So I mean, for me, you can look at somebody's resume, you can look at their education, and you can take them on and you can keep them for 9 months. You can put all that effort into them for 9 months, and then they can work for 50 cents on the dollar, yeah, to somebody else.
It's more like, yeah, $20,000 on the dollar.
Yeah. So they're going to go after you put all the time and effort into it, okay? So if I said to you, but let me just, hang on, a bit more context here. In the UK, if I was at school now, and we leave school at 16 in the UK, if you don't go on to do what they call A-levels. So if I left school at 16 and just had the tech experience that I had by growing up in this boom of tech, I could apply for a help desk technician, and an employer would look at me, even though I didn't have that level of skill, because apprenticeships are seen as more of a mainstream route. You know, they will look and say, well, I know what an apprenticeship is. Paul's going to come with not as much skill as I need, but I'm going to work with the apprenticeship intermediary to train him, and he'll build up to be that member of staff that I want, okay? In the US, employers always want a bit more there because they don't get apprenticeships as a learning process from zero. So if I had somebody, you've done your 9 months, they've walked. If I said to you, tell me what you need on day one. Now, you might come back and say, well, I need X, Y, and Z, and I might say, well, it's not apprenticeable then because you just need too much. Right? Then you can go back to taking somebody on the walk at 9 months. That's your prerogative, if that's what your normal pattern is. Or I can say to you, well, what happens if we could get somebody who could do this, this, and this? And then over the year, we can get them the skills that they want to be that productive person. Potentially, you might be able to get that skill in 9 months, but your cost would be less. Mm-hmm. Because you bring them in on a graduated salary, because then the apprentice knows they're not coming in with all the skills. You build up the skills. And as we said earlier on, you get that loyalty because of that dual investment. You know, they know that you're putting your time and effort into it. And if you're getting sort of people, if you're getting 60% of people walking after 9 months, what I'm telling you is you'd get between 85 and, you know, 92%, 83% staying for 3 years. Huh. You know, that for me is that. So what if you have to work with an apprentice to get the skills for 9 months? They're going to stay longer. Surely the return on investment is immediate. If you haven't to get somebody who apparently skilled and apparently is educated, you cannot see me doing the speech marks on a podcast. But you know,
are quotation marks.
Or apparently have the skills you need, but then they just disappear.
I think we're going to need to provide subtitles.
I think I just don't. I mean, I'm biased, obviously, but I just don't get why employers go through that same old routine. Oh, my goodness, I took somebody on again from a college or from a two-year college or from somebody who's apparently got the experience. I've spent 9 months training them, and now they've disappeared for more money. You know, take an apprentice on, spend the 9 months investing in that person, bringing them into your culture, and then they'll stay. It's a proven fact the world over.
Mm-hmm. Well, we have been... I think at this point, well seasoned in the reality that, you know, the four-year degree, the measures being taken to prepare people for college or for the workforce, at least in tech, at least in computer science, are debatable is a safe word to use. And I think if we don't pivot and address that very quickly, we will be in trouble. I think one observation that's been made is that the professors themselves, they just simply, the people that work in the field every day are not able to stay up on what they need to stay up on. Yeah. The industry has hit a critical mass of a perpetual need for upskilling. Like, you can start day one of your 4-year degree journey, and it is, let's be clear, day one of your 40-year degree journey. You know, there's no distinction in between the two. Mm-hmm. To be honest, we've had employees that were self-taught. We've had employees that maybe came from a electrical engineering background first. We'd employ, you know, employees that came with a 4-year degree. There are certain areas of you know, engineering and tech that certainly a degree with some maybe more mathematical foundation, you know, definitely helps. At the end of the day, whatever provides an individual with confidence that they need to say, I know how to do this, or I know I can solve this problem, that's what we need to have. Because an engineer, a modern technologist, I like to call them, right, is their job is truly done when they're no longer needed to do it. We are constantly solving problems that automate ourselves out of the equation, let alone those other jobs, right? So it's a lifelong learning experience. And I think apprenticeship, to be fair, is a much better way to teach experience, to teach decision-making under real pressured environments. You know, there's no substitute for real pressure. We just had a conversation earlier today with somebody that, my goodness, if you could avoid being those situations in life that push you out of your comfort zone, you know, you would. Nobody will ever push themselves harder than some unforeseen thing in life that stretches you past your comfort zone. And college is, I feel like, the direct comparison there. Yeah. You can subject yourself to a college environment with all the theory and all the safe space and all of that, that protected petri dish where you can, you know, incubate and grow, you know, or you can get out there and start getting seasoned. And so I am a big believer in apprenticeship. And what I would love to know from our listeners and from you and from anyone, I'd just love to know, you know, what are the hurdles that we're going to have to overcome as a tech industry to get people to start saying yes to apprenticeship?
Yeah.
You know, when do we stop saying we need 3 years experience and, you know, a 4-year degree before we will hire an entry level person?
Yeah. I mean, things like this is the things that have to be done. You know, and that's why we've created this Join the Apprenticeship Revolution, because behind that we want to try and just push the message out of apprenticeships, no matter who it is, how it is, or where it comes from, out there to be, because people, when they get educated about the benefits of an apprenticeship, start looking at it. You know, so employers are the key thing, you know, because you can't have an apprenticeship without a job. And I think if you boil that down even further, the first line of recruitment is always the HR people.
Yeah.
You know, we've got CEOs like you who every day will say, wow, I love the idea of apprenticeships. I can see why it would work. Just put that down the chain to the people who have to do the hiring. We find that there is sometimes an excuse as to why they can't do that, because they always hire graduates or because they always need 3 years experience. And I think, you know, we've got to get down to that level and start talk about apprenticeships to HR and hiring managers so that they can pull that that job description out the door and think, I wonder if an apprentice can do this. You know, it's a massive shift. Delivering apprenticeships is easier than having to get people to try and sign up to them. So I think it's an education process. I think the government is starting to talk about them more. I think, you know, it doesn't have to be tech. Anytime you talk apprentices, anytime you see successful apprentices, mm-hmm. you know, it's always good for the apprenticeship market. But again, as I mentioned earlier, you know, it's like, we've got to start dipping into those pools of people. You know, I always used to say it would be great to have a tech combine somewhere, you know, and you really touched on those when we were talking about, you know, doing the work in Lancaster, you know, doing STEM clubs and seeing parents with their kids and then mm-hmm. walking up and going, do you know that it takes a special talent to be able to do that? And you just did that in 5 minutes. You know, because there's people out there who just don't know what they don't know. They don't mm-hmm. know that the fact that they can solve this problem and think creatively and come up with a solution is special in this world.
Right.
They just think it's the way they've been all of their life.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I think we have to get out there, you know, and we're trying to change the mindset with employers who open for apprenticeships. You know, it's an easy way. Talk to us, we'll tell you whether you're apprenticeable or not, and then we can figure it out. If you don't take an apprentice, so what? At least we've had the conversation.
Yeah. Well, and so again, your organization's a nonprofit organization,
yeah.
and you have a toolkit where you will help a business evaluate, are they ready to offer apprenticeships? What are the steps they'll need to yeah. take? And you furthermore continually offer services yeah. after they've begun.
So yeah, so...
One-stop shop for
yeah.
apprenticeship help.
Yeah, so we've all got to make our money. We've all got to sell apprentices to make our revenue to stay afloat. But at the end of the day, what we wanted to do was have a free consultation with employers just to get the message out.
Sure.
So, you know, so we talk to employers under the Open for Apprenticeship Toolkit, which, like you say, identifies what an employer needs to look, what an apprenticeship looks like, what an employer needs to do. We then do a free evaluation of their job descriptions.
Yeah.
And we'd honestly go back to them and say, okay, you give us 5 job descriptions. Those 5, you just can't do an apprenticeship within the 2. You need to keep on doing what you're doing, but maybe look at a diverse, more diverse talent pool. Those 5, definitely they could be an apprenticeship because of day one. And we sit down with them and say, tell me what you need this person to do on day one.
Mm-hmm.
And then generally, I would say maybe 60% of the time after doing that, people look at the job description and look at what they need to do on day one and say, well, we've just done it this way all of the time, let's change it now. You know, so we can do that for anybody. I mean, the way to get a brief overview about that is just go to openforapprenticeships.com. There's a website that just explains the process on there, it'll give you an idea. But you know, but it's a first step in the right direction, baby
sure.
steps.
What about let me ask about this potential, you know, blocker. Like, you know, like I said, all successful companies are already, you know, sort of educating their own employees in their own way, shape, or form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how do we,
sorry. Sorry,
what? 9 seconds. Yeah, it's okay. how do we, to the employer that is concerned about cost.
Yeah.
We all have these programs. We are all already pay for training. We manage it internally. Mm-hmm. There's going to be familiarity with our employees. It doesn't sound like an easy thing to sort of put your toe in and try out, right? Because mm-hmm. an embedded program is a whole, there's a whole program you've
yeah.
got to follow,
yeah.
right? And is there a way I can try this out before I buy? Like, I mean, what do you say to speak to employers who are concerned about cost?
Yeah, I mean, we have a straightforward mechanism of talking about cost. We have an app that we use that we sit down in front of employers and do it and work this out in front of employers, right, direct, in sort of. So they know there's no witchcraft. We're not going away and saying, we'll put a proposal together for you. We sit in front of them, put the details in the app. They tell us how much it costs to take on a direct hire, including the training. We tell them how much it's going to be to hire an apprentice, including and add any grants or anything else that they can get. And it
sure.
spits out a figure at the end that says, this is how much you're going to save by taking on an apprentice. You know, but I think the other thing, one thing as you were talking,
is it always savings?
I think we've 95% of the time that is.
Over a direct hire?
Yeah. You know, and I mean, it all depends whether employers are willing to attribute a cost to the internal training that they do or the internal mentoring. People say, well, you know, we do it ourselves, so therefore there's no cost. But hang on, there is a cost because somebody's having to do it.
Mm.
You know, so that's the level of persuasion we get to sometimes. But one thing, when you are talking about employers who have their own programs, there's no reason why an employer can't have their own apprenticeship program. You know, if they've got internal training that they love, that they don't want to change, why not develop their own apprenticeship program? I mean, we can help them do that, obviously. You know, I can see you laughing, thinking now he's going to come in and say, you know, we can.
That's how we met.
We can help you do that. You know, and it's not a. You will, employers out there, you will be told it's a difficult task. From somebody who knows it's not a difficult task. You know, that don't be baffled with science about it. Don't listen to the scaremongering about having your own apprenticeship being a difficult thing. It's not a difficult thing. We can help you. We can help you sort that out if you want. You know, but I mean, the cost savings alone on retention generally outweigh everything, you know.
Well, and you mentioned state funds and state grants.
And some states. It depends. I mean, working in America is like working in 50 different countries. Every state has their own structure. You know, there is increased funding every year put into apprenticeships. Getting your hands on it sometimes is difficult, but some states have tax credits. Some states have money available to part fund some of the tuition. You know, currently, you know, as you know, because we're working on this together, you know, we have some money available to set off tuition costs for an employer for the first 10 apprentices that we take on.
Yeah.
You know, so you know, it's a bit, I feel like one of those people saying there's been money found in the hallway. Come and tell me what bills are in there. You know, I don't want to sort of say how much. Do you know what it is? This is one of my really weird things. I don't like going to employers and saying, by the way, I can get you it fully funded, or by the way, I can get you $10,000 off. Do you know what I mean? Because for me, apprenticeships always has to have the employer buy-in. Because if you're taking somebody on direct, you buy into that person. You know, just because there's funding available, employers might say, I'll take them because it's free. I don't want you to take them because it's free. Yeah. I want you to take them because you're going to value them as an employee of your business and make them grow to be part of your skilled workforce. So we tend not to lead with the funding. We tend to let somebody choose somebody and then go back and say, oh, by the way, it's fully funded, because we managed to get funding for that person. You know, so employers, don't think of it as a free meal. You know, think of it as a real structured, important part of development and hiring your workforce, because these people will be the future talent of your business.
I want you. We're gonna have to dig up this soundbite. But once upon a time, actually not long ago, a few months ago, I was in New Orleans and was at a talk being given by Walter Isaacson. And so the author, he wrote the Steve Jobs biography, you know, a book called Leonardo da Vinci, a book called The Innovators. You know, I very much enjoy his books, and he was just, he's always been fascinated by those who have sort of created a wave of, you know, change, in the world. And so, it was at a workforce development sort of themed sort of event. And I got a chance to ask him a question. And the question was, you know, knowing, like, after reading this book, Leonardo da Vinci, I was surprised to find out that Leonardo himself was an apprentice, you know, to a craftsman who you know, clearly influenced this great artist and humanitarian, frankly, you know, throughout his life. And so I said, you know, What does America today need to learn from, you know, 13th century, you know, Florence, and in that sense, what parts of apprenticeship need to come over? And his answer was, and I'm going to botch this up, I think we have a recording of it somewhere, but was every employer is going to have summer jobs. For kids, for high school students, there's going to be pre-apprenticeship or internships at an early age. And every employer is going to offer apprenticeship, period. If you're going to be a modern tech company, this is going to change the face of everything. The narrative is going to change. There is a revolution coming, and parents are already, I am hearing your prototypical suburban, you know, parent saying, oh yeah, two of my kids aren't going to college. You know, they're doing this. They're going straight into this.
Yeah.
And it's incredible how much the stigma of not going to college is really starting to drop away. And so, you know, don't take it from us, take it from you know, the great minds that run the Aspen Institute and all of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think there's a lot to learn from how we can adapt the apprenticeship in the tech sector. And it's exciting that that's happening here in Central PA. Thank you for everything you're doing.
Yeah, thank you.
Now, I think the question our listeners really want to know is, where did you acquire that luxurious, velvety accent?
Now, I'm from Newcastle.
Newcastle.
In the northeast of England. Where we have a strong British accent.
And a proper, smooth, brown English.
Well, in the UK, it's not seen as smooth. It's seen as really rough.
I like it.
It's one of those accents that nobody in England wants.
Nobody's ever a rock star in their own hometown, are they?
Nope.
Yeah.
No. But in America, obviously, just need to look at this. Look and listen. That's all you need to do.
this he's referring to is our beautiful podcast studio on Sabine, the Irish pub in the basement of the larger Irish pub in Leicester, PA, called Telus 360. Floor-to-ceiling record collections, floor-to-ceiling Irish whiskeys, and...
floor-to-ceiling weird pictures.
Weird pictures. We call that culture. So as a UK-based gentleman, you must have a lot of experience with apprenticeship.
Yeah, so I've been in apprenticeships for 28 years. I was an apprentice, but I've been involved in apprenticeships for 28 years in Asia, Europe, and now in the US. You know, that's what I decided to do.
And it all started at the Foundry?
At a foundry, yeah.
Yeah.
At a foundry where we made gas turbine casings for General Electrics. Until General Electrics decided that they could get it done cheaper somewhere else.
This is not a great pool for the employee retention. Yeah. Anyway, I was just doing that to get to the... Because earlier we talked about his apprenticeship in UK.
Yeah.
And then... all right. So thanks, everyone, for listening. This is... one of what will be probably many similar podcasts. We are admittedly getting off the ground, but we've got a lot of things to say. Been in this industry a long time and been observing things in our from our central Pennsylvanian vantage point. And I happen to believe that our area has a lot to share with the rest of the tech community. And I hope that this podcast helps get them there.